It's Thursday, September 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Asian financial concerns persist.
There are criminal groups that are becoming involved in facilitating their travel, whether that's one leg of their journey or the whole thing completely.
European migrants are facing serious threats. Also ahead, millions of workers on strike in India. A crisis for the world's largest mammals. Justin Bieber tries something new. It's all on today's International Edition. Wednesday was another day of volatility in Asian markets amid ongoing concerns about the weakening Chinese economy. Both Tokyo and Hong Kong ended the day lower. China expert Scott Kennedy at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies told VOA's Victor Beatty China's reliability for global growth has changed.
For a long time, we depended on Chinese growth to be a big consumer of our goods and be the factory floor for the world, but China has slowed down a lot. It's going through a massive transformation, and they've had big problems with their stock market. The devaluation of the renminbi a couple weeks ago left folks spooked. They're not sure that Chinese leaders are good managers of their economy anymore. And so China's obviously a big part of the story, but there's other parts of the global economy where there's significant anxiety, including within the United States, where people are still trying to figure out what the Fed is going to do. And, you know, the U.S. stock market itself has been going up for a long period of time without any significant correction. So I think it's a combination of factors.
The slowdown in the Chinese economy is impacting other countries. A Eurozone economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics said China's problems will impact Germany, Europe's largest and strongest economy. Quote, the slowdown in China will weigh on German manufacturing. This can really be extrapolated to many countries, including the U.S.
To some extent, Germany is probably more exposed because probably a more significant portion of their exports are to China than the United States. The biggest direct effect for China's slowdown come from two types of countries. The first are those countries like Australia and Brazil that have been selling massive amounts of commodities to China, which have fed into their infrastructure development, which would slow down, and that's had a big effect on Australia and Brazil. The other are those economies that compete with China in Southeast Asia and elsewhere. They've been challenged because of the devaluation of the renminbi of about 3-4% of late, which could eventually go down even further, depending which way China's overall economy goes. Those two kinds of countries are feeling it much more directly than the U.S. I think for the U.S., it's really psychological and feeds into the other anxieties that we have.
There is a view out there that suggests that even though the manufacturing sector in China is definitely slowing, China's economy is increasingly driven by service sector activity, which still appears healthy. Do you subscribe to that?
I do think that Chinese economy is gradually shifting from one that is primarily based on industry and fixed asset investment to one where services and individual consumption are much more important. But they're still not the primary drivers, even though the proportion of people working in services, the amount of consumption is growing. You know, they still are connected to the industrial economy in one way or another. And if China's industrial economy doesn't find a way to absorb the debt that it's built up, deleverage, reform state-owned enterprises, that's going to keep China's economy from growing rapidly or, you know, recovering in any sustained sense. So even though that transformation is accurate, China's economy can't escape the challenges that the industrial sector faces.
Kennedy says the intentions are not clear concerning China's recent market interventions and the tools they've used. He says last month's currency devaluation surprised many. Unpredictability is the word of the market today, but predictably, we have our social media segment with G. Abby Lee in Studio 22, and very thankful to have that. She's here to bring us reactions to the market fluctuation on Twitter. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim. It's no surprise that Twitter is buzzing with news outlets tweeting about how the Chinese market opened low but rebounded during the day. So here are two examples. MarketWatch at MarketWatch tweeted, Chinese stocks rebound after earlier sharp sell-off. A lot of people know that MarketWatch is a financial information website, but not too many people know it's a subsidiary of Dow Jones Consumer Media Group. Our second example is from China state-run Xinhua News Agency at XH News on Twitter. It tweeted, Chinese stocks returned to positive territory by midday after a dive in morning session.
Well, what's behind this massive sell-off and what's being done about it, Ji?
Well, for that, there's an interesting article that answers both of your questions. It's by The Street and titled, What China's Market Crisis is Really About, Transparency. The Street tweeted a link to this article a few days ago and wrote, How much is Beijing really spending to prop up the current decline in the Shanghai Composite Stock Index? Jin, when people try to make sense of the Chinese stock market, they usually talk about the slowdown in productivity, overcapacity in the economy, or a credit crunch. But the Street article argued that transparency is definitely one of the main reasons behind the market slump. It elaborated, socialist market economy by nature is not transparent, making it impossible for investors to get timely and accurate information about what's really going on inside China. And as you know, investors just don't like uncertainties or not knowing, period. So when it comes to investing, predictability, although it sounds boring, is better than volatility. I mean, much like when it comes to relationships, really. Back to you, Jim.
Well, thank you very much. Never a bore. G. Abby Lee, thanks for some great analysis. And you can find her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of refugees and migrants are currently stranded as Hungary is refusing to let them board trains toward Germany. VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with Sasha Jespersen. She's a research analyst at the Royal United Services Institute in London, who says these people are now prey for human traffickers.
It's something that we're seeing not just in Hungary, but all along the supply chain for migrants, where they're coming from and to where they want to end up, that there are criminal groups that are becoming involved in facilitating their travel, whether that's one leg of their journey or the whole thing completely. So by leaving groups of people stranded that are desperate to get to an end destination, they are going to seek out any opportunity they can to make that journey. And if there's an opportunity to profit from that, from people smuggling networks, they are going to jump on that chance. But the other risk is by the time they get to Hungary, a lot of migrants, even those that may have had the resources to engage with people smuggling networks and pay for their transit at certain parts along their journey, they may be out of resources. And then there's a risk of this blurred line between people smuggling and human trafficking becoming very, very blurred in the sense that they could be put at risk of debt bondage in that they have to pay back the trafficking networks that are taking them on to the destination country.
Now let's couple that discussion with the receiving end. Earlier, Theresa May, the Home Secretary for the United Kingdom, spoke very disparagingly of the idea and the prospect of these people coming all the way to Britain. Why is there such pressure to slam the doors shut to the United Kingdom?
I think we're seeing this in many countries, the focus on the very end of the supply chain of migration in stopping people coming to specific countries. But really, this is going against the focus on the people smuggling networks and the criminal groups that are behind this that Theresa May raised a couple of weeks ago. Instead, by focusing on the migrants and stopping them from coming to the UK, This is almost criminalizing the migrants themselves.
Well, we saw a Sudanese man walk all the way through the tunnel and pop up in Kent a couple of weeks ago. So obviously, there must be some access through the tunnel. Are there people still trying to get through via the tunnel?
I think it's likely that there are people still trying to get through. It's very difficult to tell, as in that case, the authorities weren't aware of it until he came out at the other end. There are definitely multitudes of people attempting to access the tunnel. It is becoming harder by the day. There's a lot of resources going on closing down that as an avenue to get through, but it's very possible.
From the plight of the migrants to millions of workers in India who held a one-day nationwide strike Wednesday to protest government plans for sweeping labor reforms that protesters say will put jobs at risk, as we hear from Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi.
Some 150 million workers Wednesday shut down several industries, coal and mining operations and state-run banks, demanding the government roll back plans to implement stricter labor laws and scrap its program to sell stakes in some state-owned industries. As taxi and auto rickshaw drivers joined the strike, transport also went off the roads in major cities like New Delhi and Mumbai. Schools and colleges shut down in several cities. Sporadic clashes were reported in the eastern city of Kolkata between police and activists. The strike is spearheaded by 10 major trade unions who say the government's planned overhaul of labor laws will risk the welfare of millions of workers in the country and lessen job security. Sanjeeva Reddy, president of the Indian National Trade Union Congress, told VOA they are protesting what he calls the government's pro-business policies.
Without any consultation and any discussion, they want to bring a new legislation against the laborers and against the trade union, which is one-sided, just to support the employers and the capitalists.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi has mounted a huge campaign to implement business-friendly reforms to attract foreign investment and turn India into a manufacturing hub. Two bills relating to labour have been drafted, but not yet introduced in Parliament. Discussions with trade unions have stalled on issues such as retrenchment, closure of factories, formation of unions, and a hike in minimum wage to $250 a month. The most contentious clause relates to permitting companies employing less than 300 workers to lay them off without government approval. The current cap is 100. The strike demonstrated that bringing trade unions and opposition parties on board to change labor laws will be extremely tough. The opposition has already stalled key tax and land reforms in the upper house of parliament, where the government lacks a majority. Satish Misra at the Observer Research Foundation says the government faces a tough task ahead.
Problem is that labor reforms need lot more consensus, and the government has not been able to bring different stakeholders on board.
The World Bank says India has one of the world's most rigid labor markets that has discouraged manufacturing, which accounts for just 16% of the country's gross domestic product. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
During his trip to Alaska, President Obama spoke about the need to take action on climate change or face its most severe consequences. As VOA's Roseanne Skirbel reports, the president might also want some answers to explain the spike in Alaskan whale deaths in recent months.
Since May, 30 dead whales have washed ashore on the Gulf of Alaska.
And the average for the whole year generally is 8. So it's definitely significantly elevated. And for us, that was a reason for concern.
NOAA marine scientist Deborah Fauquier says this extreme mortality event has triggered an investigation.
We might be able to, you know, figure out, is it a virus? Is it, a ship strike? Is it a harmful algal bloom?
Most algae are safe. The less common toxic alga can cause brain damage or death. The largest such bloom in a decade appeared in June along the Pacific coast from California to Alaska, thanks to warm water, sunny, and calm weather. Fisheries in several states were forced to close. Fauquier says scientists will look for signs of the harmful algae in the whales.
So some of the whales actually filter the phytoplankton and the zooplankton, which are the little insects that eat the grass in the sea, basically. So they get the toxin directly from that method. The other one is they eat the fish that eat those. So it just depends where on the food web they eat. And as you go higher up the food web, more toxin gets concentrated.
The waters around Alaska are warming, a trend which began in 2014 and continues today with temperatures 3 degrees Celsius above normal. Scientists say the warming is due to an El Nino weather event and wind patterns and not linked to climate change. But global emissions are warming the planet, heating the Arctic faster than anywhere else. At the beginning of the melt season, Arctic sea ice was at its lowest level on record, a problem for polar bears, walruses, and other marine mammals who use it as a platform to hunt, live, and breed. Fauquier says the ocean is a dynamic system.
For Arctic species that normally like cold water, it's going to change the phytoplankton, so it's going to change that the base of the food web. It's going to change the fish. They may go farther north because they don't like warm water. And so then the predators that are mobile are going to have to either follow those fish, or if they can't follow them, then they can starve.
Fauquier says NOAA hopes to explain why the whales died and why they perished in such great numbers. Knowing the cause, she explains, is the first step to understanding the problem. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Justin Bieber has a new tune. What Do You Mean is his first attempt at electronic dance music, which he performed on the MTV Video Music Awards. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Border Crossing's host Larry London about the tune, Justin's performance, and the video for the new song.
Justin Bieber has a new tune out. It's called What Do You Mean? Larry London, what does he mean? What is he saying with this tune?
Well, it's kind of a love story, and it's an interesting song. It's Justin's very first attempt at electronic dance music, which is now called EDM in the common vernacular. And so it seems that everybody's doing EDM these days. Folks like David Guetta, and the list goes on and on with all the DJs, Afrojack, Zedd, you name it. That seems to be a very in style of music. So Justin Bieber is capitalizing on that with his next album, which is supposed to be an EDM album. The new song came out a week ago, and he sang it for the first time on the MTV Video Music Awards. In fact, it was his first time in 5 years performing on the show.
What do you mean?
You know, his performance on the VMAs, though, it reminded me a lot, and you can take this as a compliment or not, it reminded me a lot of Michael Jackson.
That's true.
Because it looked almost like Justin was trying to be Michael. Yeah, there is no other Michael Jackson. But it looked like Justin was kind of trying to do the same kind of choreography, almost like Michael was doing in his preparations for his last tour.
Yeah, Michael's influence is obviously felt throughout that particular number, and certainly the presentation he gave at the award show, where he's propelled on the on these cables over the crowd and whatnot. And then at the end of the song, he said it was unrehearsed. It wasn't expected. He broke down. He just started to break down and cry for a few seconds on stage, which wasn't a part of the plan. It didn't happen in rehearsals.
Right. And, you know, this tune, the video, the regular video, not the VMA, but the video also features an actress, Xenia, what's her name?
Xenia Deli.
Yes.
From Moldova. And
she is very attractive.
Yes.
And Justin, she's got, also in this video is John Leguizamo. Very, very talented actor, but he plays kind of like a hood or a drug dealer in
and
this
And he's
little,
out for a short little cameo at the beginning, and then the rest of the film is, of the video, is them, you know, Xenia and Justin rolling around, getting passionate with one another, then being abducted and in the car, and jumping off a building together and doing some interesting stunts. But there was a rumor going around that the two of them were actually more than just co-workers.
Right.
And that has been squelched. Xenia has come out and said, nope, we spend a lot of time together in a short period of time, and we are very good friends. We work together, and that's about it.
It was acting.
It was acting.
It was pretend. Now, Justin, you mentioned he's got a new album coming out. Any title for the album? Or?
It's untitled right now. This will be Justin's fourth album, and it's expected in mid-November.
All right. Well, if you have any comments about Justin Bieber's new track or his new album, you can hit Larry up at @VOA_music. That's on Twitter. You can also listen for his show, Border Crossings. That's on our website, www.voanews.com.
In addition to Justin Bieber, you've been listening to International Edition. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, our handle there, VOA_IE. And you can always send us one of those old-fashioned emails, voaasia@voanews.com. We'd love to hear from you and what's on your mind. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. And you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Modern slavery is a blight on humanity and is nearly universally condemned, but it does not exist in a vacuum. Trafficking in persons is often perpetrated by well-organized transnational criminal gangs that ensure smooth operations through bribery. In the process, they destroy not only the lives of people whom they enslave, they degrade entire economies. Slavery doesn't just destroy communities and harm everyday people. It fuels a network of ruthless criminals and armed groups that create insecurity and instability around the world, said David Luna, a senior director in the Office of Anti-Crime Programs at the U.S. State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs. The societal harms and impacts posed by human trafficking are very real. Corruption helps to fuel it and enriches not only those criminal networks behind today's modern slavery, but also enables corrupt police, customs, judicial, and other security officials who protect traffickers and allow them to carry out their criminal activities. Modern slavery recognizes no borders, and therefore, just as no economy is immune from corruption, no single jurisdiction can solve this problem on its own. To defeat this scourge, the community of nations must begin by making clear to the public how much harm human trafficking causes to communities and educating vulnerable populations about the methods used to ensnare and exploit those they enslave. We must also increase the scrutiny of supply chains where little to none may exist. Governments must adopt the highest standards of accountability and human rights protection and ensure that their suppliers and contractors are held to those standards as well. At the same time, international organizations and companies must enforce policies against human trafficking throughout their supply chains. Mechanisms must be established to report cases of abuse, harassment, or violence, and to identify and protect victims of trafficking. Human trafficking siphons away the human capital potential of communities to build sustainable economic growth in a manner that respects human rights, said Mr. Luna. No person should ever have a price tag attached to their heart and soul, nor be restricted, abused, and violated against their physical integrity and free will.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.